my name is Tracy Melissa Wheaton, and I'm the Program Specialist and Technology Specialist for InSource. I'm here today with Dr. Joel Haber, also known as the Bully Coach, and he is here to speak with us today about the unique problem of bullying. Dr. Haber is a clinical psychologist and nationally recognized parenting expert who has dedicated more than 20 years to the prevention of abusive behaviors in children and adults. He is the author of the internationally acclaimed Bully Proof Your Child for Life, Protect Your Child from Teasing, Taunting, and Bullying for Good, published by Peregrine Penguin, and is also co-author of the new book, The Resilience Formula. Dr. Haber is also a member of the advisory board for the Bully Project and credited in the 2012 movie Bully. He's been a speaker and webinar leader for the Federal Partners in Bullying Prevention, including the Department of Education and eight others, and has been an invited participant at events hosted by the Federal Partners in Bullying Prevention. Dr. Haber is a leading expert for the LG Text Education Council, an advisory council assembled by LG Mobile Phones. The council members provide useful information on a variety of subjects and offer guidance to effectively handle issues concerning cyberbullying and mobile phone misuse. Dr. Haber is also an advisor to Cartoon Network's Stop Bullying and Speak Up campaign, which launched in 2010. Dr. Haber is also the co-founder of Toolkits for Kids, which is the recipient of 5 National Parenting Awards for their emotional first aid kits, helping parents and kids develop skill sets to overcome worry, build confidence, and develop resilience. He's also the advisor for www.herotopia.com, the first social online game for kids to address bullying. Dr. Haber, welcome. It's a very great pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Haber, can you please define for our audience what it means to be a bully? What, if anything, separates a bully from an aggressive kid who's behaving immaturely? Is there really any difference?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. It's the thing that's almost most complicated for parents about, like, what is a bully and what isn't, and for teachers too, because lots of behaviors these days are called bullying behaviors. But a kid who's bullying does a couple of things. They intentionally, and intention is important, try to bring another kid down. They identify someone as a target, and they try to make them feel worse than they do and bring them down to a level below them to enhance their own power and make themselves feel better. But they do that by marginalizing someone else. And that's really what bullying is all about. It usually happens over a period of time. It's not just a one-time occurrence generally. It's a systematic attempt to make a kid feel bad and to make themselves feel better.
Well, what causes a child to become a bully? What is the psychology behind that kind of behavior?
You know, it's a really good question too. And the hard part about this is that almost all kids at times try out bullying behavior because they may not know what it is or isn't. They just know maybe aggressive, like you said before in the first question. You know, sometimes it's an aggressive kid is just testing out behavior because he doesn't know that it's not okay. If it's systematic, you know, that's what bullying is. But kids who do it actually sometimes do it because they get that kind of training at home. They kind of role model parent behavior. And sometimes parents are pretty aggressive themselves or use behaviors that may look like bullying to kids. Sometimes they're really exclusive to others. They leave other parents out or other friends. They can be mean or aggressive to their kids or others. So, you know, sometimes kids do it for that reason. Other times kids bully because they want to kind of climb up the social ladder and they want to put other kids below them. And that's actually probably the most common reason, is that they're trying to gain social status. We call that social laddering in a sense, because kids generally divide themselves into social groups based on, you know, popularity. And the hard part about that is that as kids try to move up the ladder, sometimes they use bullying tactics.
Does this behavior imply in these bullies at times low self-esteem, maybe? Do they feel they can't get to the top of that ladder without hurting others or using others as a step?
You know, that is... In the old days, when I was growing up, I mean, I think most of us probably have a bully story ourselves. I mean, I was a kid who was bullied myself when I was young. But, you know, we used to think that the bullying kids were very insecure kids who were maybe bigger and, you know, maybe awkward. And they would use their power and strength to make someone feel worse, right? And there still are a few of those kind of bullies. But the bigger problem kids are kids who are very different than that, who do bullying. And they have these kind of traits. They're generally popular, they're smart, they're socially successful, they're liked by teachers, they're liked by kids, And they're, you know, they kind of go under the radar. They kind of look like leaders. And the problem is we never suspect those kind of kids. But those kids do the most damage. And the reason is because as adults, we don't suspect those kids would do it at all. But that's a big problem. And they look like leaders because in every way, we sort of want our kids to be, you know, successful. But bullying kids don't use their empathy very much. They hurt other kids. They try to exclude. Where leaders, generally, who may have those traits, are inclusive. They bring other kids together. And that's kind of the dividing line with those popular kind of bullies, which are the most damaging.
That's interesting.
Surprising, right?
Yeah, very much so. Why do bullies pick the targets that they pick? I mean, what makes someone, a child, for example, an easy mark for a bully?
You know, a lot of us in this field have worked a lot of years to try to make sense of that. And we used to only think that bullies pick on kids who are at the bottom of the social ladder. In general, when I was talking about that social ladder before, if you picture a ladder, on top are about 15% of kids who are the popular ones. In the middle of the ladder are 70% of most kids, you know, just like the average kids. And then on the bottom are about 15% of kids who, for some reason, and this also hurts the special needs kids the most, they're different in some way. They're vulnerable. They're different. You know, they may have a disability. They're unique in some way. Maybe they're, and if they're not even with special needs, maybe they're just smart. They wear different clothes. But in some way, they're vulnerable. And generally, we used to think that kids who were picked on were really primarily from that bottom group. But it also now, the research shows that kids trying to move up the social ladder and move between groups are also vulnerable. But the biggest population of kids who are targeted are those kids who are different in some way.
Can you provide our listeners with some examples of what bullying might look like?
Sure. And, you know, there's really four kinds of bullying. There's what we call physical bullying, which is the most common. You know, like in our, in, again, my to date myself, years ago, we used to think that bullies were only physical. You know, they would push kids off a fence. They would knock kids into school lockers. They would knock their books down, you know, maybe grab something from them and break it. They would gang up and throw a kid down. And physical bullying still exists. You know, kids can do that still by pushing and shoving. We still see that in school. But actually, that's come down a little bit with all these bully efforts we see across the country and in schools. The second kind of bullying, though, which is actually more painful than physical bullying, is verbal bullying, where kids use words to hurt each other. You know, it's like teasing in a way that really makes a kid feel uncomfortable, or taunting someone else, you know, or ganging up on them and basically getting a group to kind of make fun of someone. And the reason that that's more painful, it's more psychological than physical. The third kind of bullying, which in my mind is actually even more painful than that, is what we call relational bullying or social exclusion. You know, kids who are left out and excluded are most vulnerable for some of the most severe effects of bullying. And that's because, you know, every kid, I mean, look, we'd love them to go to school just to learn, but when they go to school, what do they really want? They want connectedness. And having friends is so important to them. So for kids to feel part of a group, that's hugely important. And when they don't, and they're left out and excluded, it's really awful. So exclusion has really, for me, been an area to really target. And we really have to think about ways to help kids who are targeted not feel so isolated. And we'll get to some of those answers later a little bit. But the fourth kind of bullying is what we call cyberbullying. And that's kind of the newer form of bullying. And, you know, cyberbullying has kind of been around since the advent of technology. As technology has grown and most kids use it, you know, we see cyberbullying because it's really a form of emotional bullying, right, that causes feelings of fear and isolation and humiliation among its targets. But what it is really, it's bullying that occurs over digital devices or the internet, you know, where kids send like nasty negative messages, images, or video clips about others. And those kind of bullying, cyberbullying can take many forms, like sending mean or embarrassing comments or images to chat rooms, message boards, websites, social networking sites, even gaming sites where kids play, cell phones, instant messages, or even email. That's been a really scary thing because it's expanded the realm somewhat of bullying to kids who might not have been involved in it. And what's hard about that is, you know, kids are so much online now that whereas they used to go to school and get bullied, they can come home and feel safe. Now they come home and it can be on their, you know, on their technology. So it's created a place for kids that's been in some cases pretty awful because there's no escape from it.
Yeah, and I'm struck as you're speaking about this too. I mean, yeah, in the old days when I was in school, and of course everyone has a bullying story. I have my share, but yeah, bullying wasn't as nuanced then as it is now. I mean, it's really seems to have evolved into a much more sophisticated brand of bullying, and that's kind of scary to me.
You know, you're right, and I think that what's happened is we're seeing many more now opportunities for kids to kind of come forward with the kinds of bullying they exhibit because we've made it comfortable in some ways and we've made bullying kind of a problem that everyone's aware of. So we're really getting the understanding and the full force of what problem this really is about. You know, some people claim this is like a human rights issue. You know, people shouldn't treat each other badly like that. But the reality is it was always there. But like you said, people used to think, hey, this is a rite of passage, let it go. But the problem is that really lots of kids suffer from bullying and it's not acceptable. It's really not okay. And now we have data to say that, you know, kids who are bullied repeatedly have many more problems in school, in their social lives, and long term. You know, they avoid school, they don't want to go to class, they're worried so much about bullying, they're not paying attention in class. And there's and problems long term in terms of their socialization, their ability to feel, you know, okay inside, their self-esteem suffers, they can become anxious, depressed. So we've really made this a national movement, which I think is a good thing. So parents can become aware, schools can become aware, and we can try to start rallying communities to try to do what's needed to help.
And that's great. And we are grateful for that. As you know, InSource is an agency that helps parents of children with disabilities. We advocate for their kids within the context of special education. And I'm sure you know such children face a lot of unique challenges both at school and in other situations, social situations.
Yes.
And as a parent advocate, I often receive calls from parents of these children who tell me that their child is being bullied by other children at school because of their disability. Because this is well out of my field of expertise, can you tell me how I might direct parents to get these kinds of matters sorted out? For example, a parent approaches me and says, oh, you know, my son in a wheelchair, for example, is being bullied. You know, he comes home, he's crying. What do I do about it?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, there's a lot of parts to that question. Let me just try to take them one step at a time. This might be really helpful. And if you think we're missing something, just please let me know and we'll try to go back and cover it. But I think the first thing is, you know, communicating with your kids, which is always the hallmark of parenting, has to start at a level that puts your child at ease when you talk to them. You know, you sit at a child's level, maintain eye contact, and asking simple questions about an incident or about bullying is kind of critical so you can listen to what they have to say. I try to get parents to ask the following kind of questions to try to document the kinds of bullying that happens to their kids, because sometimes kids are not great at relaying details. So you want to ask these kind of questions to them when they're in a relaxed mood and you can just sit and talk with them. You know, what kids were there when this happened? Was there a teacher who saw what happened? Was there a kid who called you names or hurt you? Whose class is he in? Where did this happen? You know, when did it happen? You know, what exactly did the kid say to you? What exactly did the kid do to you? And is this the only time it happened or has it happened before? You know, what other times? And did this person do anything else to you? By asking those questions, we begin to kind of form a narrative, a story. Like, we try to document exactly what happened. So if we have to approach the school, which is the next thing, we can do it in a very objective way. Because it's so easy as a parent, when you hear your kid's been picked on like this, to just call the school in an emotional rage, right? How many parents don't get angry about this? We all do. But if we call the school with anger and with a lot of emotion, they're going to respond to us by tuning us out and think we're the problem.
Right.
So that's not the way to go. You really have to kind of write everything down in a very detailed way. So when you approach the school, you can talk to them by relaying facts, by documenting what happened. And that really begins the process of forming a plan with the school. So what I suggest is that you first talk to your child's teacher, you know, and if they're given, you know, if there's any extra resources for them, talk to the resource people who are also with your child and then let them know what happened, right? And ask the teacher or the person who may be a resource person with them, have you ever suspected that, you know, this child was bullied? And if so, ask them, you know, what they noticed, what was happening, and ask them if they can let you know if this happens again, right? And then you can say to that teacher, what did you do to stop the bullying if you saw it? And then you describe the incident that as your child told you. Now, when you do that, what happens is you want to ask the teacher what they would do next if this happens again. And then from there, you develop kind of a plan, an action plan, we call it, of how to help. And when you get that in writing and you write it all down, what I say to do is put it in a very nice letter. Say, thank you for your call today. We really appreciate what we spoke about. Here's what we discussed. Here's the plan if my child gets bullied again. And thank you so much. Can you please call me within the next week to see if this incident happened again? By doing that and by being respectful and kind to the school and the teacher, you develop a very good documented letter. And that's the beginning of whether or not we can push this further if, in fact, they don't do something right.
I like that you kind of empower the parent to just go ahead and write the letter. Don't wait for the school to create a plan, which in special education, for we who are advocating on the rights or on behalf of a child, we're often the ones sort of in the vulnerable position waiting for the school to come up with a plan, waiting for the school to create an intervention.
Well, the frustrating part of that, though, is that, like, again, there's a lot of issues that kids need, especially when they have special needs. But in a bullying situation, which has happened, it can really affect a child's emotional feelings and their willingness to want to go to school. It can really shake them up. So it's not something we want to wait on too long.
Right. Yes. And I like that you've empowered the parents to go ahead, just write the letter. Put it in a reasonable format that everyone can understand. After having addressed it, you just kind of reiterate the points of your discussion in the letter, and you have a sort of an informal written plan that's in place. I think that's great.
And I think I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think if you think about that, once you do that in a nice, respectful way, and you send it back to them, then if it continues, you can go back to the teacher, or you can even move it up to the principal. Because you say, I spoke to the teacher, but we still have a problem. And then you do the same thing with the principal. How can we get this problem solved if, in fact, you've already tried with the teacher? Because you're using, you know, the steps you need to go through the authority ladder, you know, teacher and then higher ups to principal, to see if you get the issue resolved, which is very successful generally.
I understand that some children are reticent to share the fact that they're being bullied with friends and family. How can a parent ascertain if their child is being bullied if the child doesn't tell someone?
Yeah, you know, this is a big problem because most kids don't want to talk to their parents about this. And the reason is because socially, they feel defeated. It's humiliating. It can be embarrassing. It can be scary to them. And many times they're afraid if they tell their parent, the parent's going to get angry with them or upset or angry that the situation happened. And they're going to want to storm into the school and do exactly the opposite of what we just spoke about. So, you know, I've seen so many parents like get that opportunity when a kid shares something like this that's upsetting to them. And they get so enraged that they take over and they get upset and they call the school. And they basically lost that kid from talking to them for a long time after that, which is so sad. So instead, you know, I really encourage, first of all, parents to remember that your kids are going to go through a lot of difficult things in life. That's part of what life is and building resilience will be. It's a positive thing kids need to do. It's okay. But you have to remember that reacting too strongly is not in our best interest. In this new book I wrote, The Resilience Formula, you know, we talk about how to kind of get control over some of those kind of feelings before you talk to your child. But if you want to know, even if you're not sure if your child's being bullied, how to deal with that, you know, if they are being bullied, the way I do it is I kind of normalize or ask parents to normalize questions around bullying and do it like once a month, right? So at dinner or if you have them in a car, ask kind of calm questions. For example, like, you know, hey, so in school today, did you learn anything that was great? Did you have any, like, do anything special that was fun? And then you can say, so who'd you have lunch with today? Who'd you sit with? And then who'd you hang out with if you had time in recess? What'd you do? And then you can say, hey, do you ever notice any kids who were getting picked on or teased or, you know, made fun of? Or any kids who are left out of games and things? And then your last question is, does that ever happen to you? And with those kind of easy questions, you begin that process of making kids feel like this is conversation that's safe and acceptable and that a parent cares about it. So it gives you an opportunity to find out who they see being bullied and if it happens to them. And by doing that regularly, It's very, very helpful.
That's a great tip. And I think as much as a parent can normalize something, the better, because kids have enough stress and angst to deal with, without having to worry about their parents, getting emotional over something that may have occurred at school. Because children spend so much of their day with other children in schools, schools seem to be provide a facile venue for bullying.
Yeah.
What are schools doing to reduce instances of bullying? I've noticed in some of the schools when I go to attend case conferences, there'll be signs, little posters in the hallways that say, if you see bullying, text something, something. What's happening in schools?
Well, there's a lot of things. It depends on the state. It depends on every district. Every district has a different idea about what to do. And, you have to remember that, we used to years ago, people did nothing. Now there are bully policies, because almost all states now have bully laws to try to kind of root out this problem. So mostly schools are taking the policy and trying to do something where they do training if possible. The best kind of schools train all their staff. That's really helpful in what bullying is and what to do when they see it, and on how to document these issues and how to help kids when they report these issues. What needs to happen is that kids, when they're in school, need to feel that there are at least 6 adults in school who are safe people they can go to report if bullying happens. It can be safe people online that they can go to, or someone they can see, whether it be in the lunchroom, in the hallway, in the office, maybe a nurse. People that they can feel can help them feel safe if they feel emotionally or physically bullied. Because feeling support is kind of a critical thing that all kids need, even if they don't know how to stop the bullying. There's also a huge opportunity in schools for training where kids get involved in the bully problem, because when you think about it, most bullying happens away from teachers, because smart kids are not going to want to bully in front of a teacher and get caught. So, there's 3 groups when we talk about bullying. There's the bully group, kids who do the bullying. There's what we call the bystander group, the observers. And then there's the kids who are targeted on the bottom. So the prevailing theory has been that if we can rally that middle group, the bystanders of 70%, to kind of do the right thing and stand up to a bully, they can do the most to help a kid who's on the receiving end. Now, there are some problems with that, which is, even if we train kids to be good bystanders, in the situation, lots of times they're really afraid to stand up directly to a bully because they don't want to become the next target. So what we ask kids to do, which I think is what we're trying to get schools to do more so, is to give kids a menu of choices when they see bullying. But they can't just stand around. They have to act. Now, they can act not necessarily in that moment by standing up to a bully directly, because only a very small percentage of kids are willing to do that. But they could walk away after and tell a teacher or a monitor. Or they could tell the kid who's being bullied, hey, I'm really sorry that happened. I didn't know what to do. But why don't you walk with me to class tomorrow? Why don't you sit with us at lunch? Or why don't we, tell a teacher together tonight? Or why don't I send a note to the teacher online tonight, right? By doing something, we're trying to empower bystanders to become what we call upstanders or allies for that kid who's targeted, so they don't feel so marginalized and alone. That's what successful schools are doing. And we really encourage schools to teach their kids to take action and to find those adults in school who are really willing to be there to hear kids, support them, and provide them safety when in fact they engage, bullying does exist in school.
That's great, and it's very reassuring to hear that. I wonder, maybe you're aware, if there is there any legislation in place? I'm sure it varies from state to state, or even, as you said, district to district, but is there any legislation in place that requires schools to at least go through some preliminary training about how to prevent bullying? Or at this point, is this all sort of voluntary on the part of the schools?
Well, I have to say it's really variable by state. I don't know if that New Jersey was one of the first states to really take this on in a big way after some of the cyber problems they had there. And, they have a very sophisticated system now of reporting and training and documenting, and it's public, it's open to the public to look at which schools have what kind of bullying and what's reported. And there's discipline issues if, for schools and And there's also consequences if schools don't follow the protocols. But every school is different. Some states and don't even just have, you know, the concept that we want bullying to stop, but it's just a policy at the policy level. So you really have to check your state or type in your state and bullying law on Google and find out exactly what that what your state has as a bullying law right now. So everyone's kind of requiring something, but it could be minimal to very extensive. And like, I don't actually know what Indiana has in this as we're thinking about that. I could certainly check, but you know, it's worth, if you have people who cover you who actually are living outside of the states, to actually Google their state in terms of bullying law, and they can get in, you know, pretty quickly information on what is acceptable.
Interesting. Do you happen to know, for example, in New Jersey, is an act of bullying considered criminal on behalf of the bully?
Yeah, you know, the issue of like criminal is still being debated. You know, it depends on the level of bullying. Right now, we're trying to bring those kind of cases into bullying, into a bullying law, into these new laws, because all we had before the bully issues were what we call harassment. You know, that was the legal term, which can mimic bullying. So sometimes bullying turns into harassment, but now within bullying, they're laying out in the laws what should happen in terms of consequences for a repeated, you know, abuser of kids. So when I say abuser, meaning a kid who's doing chronic bullying. So, you know, there are consequences that schools can kind of create for themselves, but the issue is to really make it clear that if bullying continues besides the documentation, there will be consequences for them. And schools have to develop a consistent plan. You know, the legal issues with bullying have been very complicated, you know, because proving harassment versus bullying has been difficult. But now with the new laws, we're going to see a pretty big upsurge and upswing of legal cases on kids who do bully others. Yeah, it's definitely coming.
A lot has been said about cyberbullying, and you touched on that a little bit earlier. Can you tell our listeners what that is, what it looks like, and how they can keep their children safe from cyberbullies?
Yeah, I think I mentioned before that, you know, it really takes many forms, but think about it this way. If you're using any kind of device, right,
like any cell kind phone or computer, yeah, tablet,
anything,
yeah,
social networking, right, that if you talk to other kids, you know, and that's why social media is so big, anyone can be mean or hurtful to you. Anyone can kind of try to get their friends to barrage you with emails or IMs to kind of be really mean and nasty. Or, you know, there's like message boards that kids put up to kind of make a kid feel awful. You know, like there's hate boards, we call them. There's all kinds of ways that kids can threaten others. The problem, again, is that kids are on their computers all the time. And when, in fact, they're attacked that way, the difference in cyberbullying is that they don't get to see their attacker. In direct bullying, you kind of know who's doing it. It's direct, we call it. But in these cases, you don't even know where it's coming from sometimes, or maybe hard to trace. So it creates much more distress that's hard to respond to because you don't even know where it may be coming from. Because kids steal passwords from other kids. So if you think someone's being mean, that's a friend, it may come from someone else. It's a much more difficult problem.
When that occurs, when that happens, I mean, how would you advise a parent to respond? I mean, I would think of maybe if someone pasted something on your Facebook page or posted something on your Facebook page, your child's Facebook page, and it's hateful, and that you could maybe take a screenshot of that, you know, for proof, and then maybe, you know, report
good.
To webmaster or something. What do you think?
Yeah, it's actually really good. I mean, I guess the tips I would say come down to this kind of thing. First of all, you want to save any evidence, just like you said. Print copies of like messages and websites. You know, and you can use the save feature on IMs. For first offense kind of things, if it's a minor thing, just try to ignore it, delete it, or block the sender. Let them know you're not responding to it. That's for simple things. You know, IMs, emails, cell phones usually have blocking features. But if there's any kind of really like a fake or an offensive profile that kind of puts your child up on a social networking site where they're embarrassed, you know, some awful things done, a video's posted that they don't know about, you have to report it to the site itself, right? And the link can be found under many sections, you know, under the help sections of websites, you know, from MySpace to Facebook. But you as a parent have to kind of investigate your child's online presence because you don't really know what's going on. I mean, you know, the scariest thing is when parents don't have any clue about what their kids are doing online. And these kind of things, I really encourage parents, if you're going to let your kids be online, is to find out what they're doing. Sit with them. Learn about the internet yourself. Because what you don't know is the scary stuff. So by kind of talking to your kids about what they're doing online, you can also talk to them about what we call netiquette, which is using good sense, you know, good manners online. Like, don't say mean or nasty things to anyone, because once you send it, it's out there for others to see. Don't do anything that you wouldn't tell your grandmother, for example, you know, in a manner kind of way online, because what kids don't understand is that things last on the internet. They talk to their friends in ways that are hard to believe. And then what they don't realize is that can stay online forever. So you have to really, you know, remind your kids to use the internet appropriately. But if you are bullied and it's with another student, let's say, right, and you realize another student did this, you got to bring that evidence that to the school counselor. And that way they can see in school if their kid's also bullying you in other ways. Now, if the perpetrator, by the way, is kind of known, right, was continuing to do it, you have to really get your parents involved, if possible, and have them contact that parent, see if that parent knows what's happening, which I think is perfectly reasonable. And if that doesn't continue, you can certainly report this to, you know, the police if it's something that feels harassing or unsafe to your child.
I've experienced before when parents have said that their child is being bullied by another child in school, that occasionally it'll come up in an IEP meeting, for example, and a question may be asked by one parent, you know, so what's going on with this other child? Is this child going to be? And then the school will say, well, we can't discuss that other child. We can't tell you his name. We can't go into any details about that other child. There seems to be, and I appreciate that they're trying to respect the child's, you know, anonymity and protect the child's rights, et cetera. And that's all very important. But at what point, I mean, is a parent going to get the information they need in order to, say, for example, contact the authorities if they feel that their child is really, you know, in some kind of danger? I mean, how do you, can you, is there even a way to compel the school to share that information?
Yeah, good question. Actually not. But remember this, that the school does not have to give you those specifics because protection of privacy is critical. But in the way we talked about developing a plan with the teacher, if your child's continually bullied, you take that to the principal, then you take it to the superintendent. And if you don't get a response, if your child is unsafe emotionally or physically, you take it to the legal authorities. You can take it to police. You can take it to lawyers. That puts a lot more pressure. But we try to really get these things resolved up the ladder. And usually it is, I have to tell you. Without knowing the specifics, like of who's bullying, even though you may know because your kid's going to tell you, they can't tell you how they've responded to that family or that kid, but you'll know if it's what they're doing is working if your child is not being bullied anymore. And if it's not, you keep going back to them and be your child's advocate to say, my child's still unsafe. This continues. I'm not getting the help that we discussed. We developed a plan. It's not working. What do you want me to do next? If it's not working, you take it to the next level.
Dr. Habert, where can parents go to get more information about keeping their child safe from bullies?
But I mean, my website, respectletteru.com, has so much information about this, and I'm updating it every week. I try to keep kind of a running place for this. My book, Bullyproof Your Child for Life, is a really great resource. People write me almost every week about this now, so it's really great. But, you know, there are, depending on the kind of issues your kids have, again, online resources, it's kind of like the biggest library in the world, right? I mean, if I have to say, if parents have a question that they can't get an answer for, they can email me and I can help them find the resource. So my email is joel@respectu.com. And again, it's R-E-S-P-E-C-T, the letter U.com. I cannot tell you how many emails a week. I can answer most of them in a relatively quick period of time, but I'm happy to help people find resources they need.
Dr. Habert, thank you so much for your time. And we hope to maybe visit with you again sometime.
That'd be great. It's a big topic. I'm sure if there's more questions, we can certainly speak on further ones as we go forward, okay?
Okay. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to the InSource podcast. The views expressed on this podcast are the views of the person being interviewed and are not necessarily those of InSource.